Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're on 101.9 Hi FM. This is the People in Perspective show. You're with Saul Rosenberg. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are currently talking this week about the phenomenon of foreign nationals working in South Africa, which has been an issue for many years here in South Africa, as well as the issue of xenophobia and how does the society deal with that? How do we sort of come to terms with the fact that people have this fear of foreign people taking their jobs, and at the same time, internationally, in terms of international relations, we are currently showcasing ourselves in New York. We've got to get we've got to get the investment community, the international investment community, interested in South Africa again. So, from a policy point of view, what are we doing on that front? And in the show, I've got Sarah Gon, who's a fellow at the Institute of Race Relations, to help us understand the policy and the direction that the country is going in. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Saul. Hi.
Lovely to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us. Sarah, this is a sort of issue that comes up in the news from time to time, where there's, this uneasy relationship that it's such an unpleasant thing to see when it happens. When we've got foreign nationals in the workforce, and suddenly people start thinking differently about them, in behind closed doors or talking to each other about them, they're perceived to be taking somebody's job away from them. And I mean, it happens all over the world, but we have a particular thing in certain strata of the economy. To deal with that, the situation, because we've got a hub of economic activity, we're always going to have foreigners coming here to seek work. From a policy point of view, how are employers sort of looked after in terms of this type of problem? What's looking after the employer and what's looking after the foreign nationals involved?
Okay. Well, basically, in law, South African citizens are entitled to take up a job. All they have to do is just show, proof of that they are a citizen by some form of identification. Mm. And actually, with the difference with them and foreign nationals is that if foreign nationals do not also obtain the citizenship of South Africa, then they need to have a visa that shows that they have the right to take up employment. Mm. So the foreign national doesn't have an automatic right to be employed. That person has to show that the authorities have given them a visa that gives them the right to work. Mm. And obviously, that's theoretically all well and good, but you have so many complicating factors. And as you've alluded to, the one is that South Africa, despite what we see as our huge problems, is still an attractive place for people, particularly from poor countries, to flock to because of perceived space to work and to create jobs and to create businesses. And driven usually by a desire to succeed, in coming from environments where success is maybe extremely limited at all, then of course what you have is you'll have foreign nationals, particularly from Africa, places like Africa, coming in numbers, and obviously exacerbated by having lax border controls and which could include bribing.
Yes,
officials. So people get in when they technically shouldn't have a right to do so, but it is a reality. And obviously they'll move into living areas where we have a local citizenry that is hugely unemployed. I mean, virtually the highest level of recorded unemployment in world terms. Mm. So suddenly there becomes a perceived, shall we say, competition, which may be more perceived than real, but that doesn't necessarily diminish the consequences of it. Mm. Obviously, foreigners may well take on jobs that South Africans are either reluctant to, or at wages that are below sort of accepted wage rates, you know, or set down wage rates in terms of bargaining councils and other forms of regulation. Mm. So they seem to succeed where South Africans are struggling, and this is what sets up the xenophobia, basically. Mm. I suppose hatred towards or mistrust of it. And particularly also foreigners, if they come in, they will often form alliances with other people from their home countries and create supply chains that allow them to create different types of businesses or et cetera. You know, when South Africans say, you know, they are taking our jobs, no one has a right to a job per se. You have rights in employment, and they covered constitutionally, Employment Equity Act, that sort of thing. But you can't enforce a right to have a job willy-nilly, you know, whether it's, you can't force the private sector to employ just because people need jobs. Mm. And that shows some of the weakness of having a huge amount of social and economic rights, but that actually, and the problem with those sorts of rights is that the ability to actually provide them depends on the resources of the society.
So it's, you know, essentially, you know, it's one of those sort of situations where, you know, you can't escape, you know, the catch-22 of saying, well, I'm a foreign national. And I have to get work in. So I can't find work in in my own country. I'm sure the situation rises up. You know, the conditions say, you know, I'm a Zimbabwean, for instance. Conditions are appalling in Zimbabwe. I have to go to South Africa. So, and then as a South African country, well, we're saying to you, well, we've got a local unemployment problem. So it actually then comes down to a skills and competency-based issue to say, you know, why is this person more eligible than somebody else?
Yeah. Well, you see, sometimes it will be skills. I mean, you may find people coming in who do have more skills than the people that the locals that they're essentially competing with, or they may have the skills, but they can't get access to the right to practice those skills. But they'll go into, I suppose, jobs that are for which they are overqualified just to work, and you know, that sort of migration is not unusual. Unusual worldwide.
Yes.
What's probably a bit unusual is that, you know, with the depredations of apartheid, you never had a sort of large immigration out of South Africa to look for opportunity. So it's often, and it's something that's, you know, that becomes a source of tension between the two groupings. And then, of course, the reality is very often foreigners will marry a local citizen.
Yes.
So, and their child will, provided one of the parents is a South African citizen, their children are become South African citizens by birth. Mm. And, you know, so that line sort of merges and disappears to some extent, but will often come to a head in times of real crisis. But I mean, you know, this idea of people taking our jobs and, you know, spaza shops should be reserved for South African citizens only. It's not as if there are X number of spaza shops that are made available by the government, and they're being given to foreigners. It's a question of the spaza shops exist because people exercise sort of their own ingenuity or see a need or can fill a gap, that although the need may be seen and felt, local citizens may not have the impetus or the sense of skills to actually create the work, to create the jobs. And I say that at the same time, we have a very, very vibrant and necessary informal sector that, you know, created mostly by South African citizens to meet the need of the fact that society is not providing them with the necessary jobs for all the myriad of reasons that we often talk about.
I think it's a sort of process of, slowly somebody, you know, I'm sure you get isolated cases where somebody makes a decision that they want to come to South Africa and they've got a particular reason. You know, to see these things as on a case-by-case basis might take some of the irrationality out of all of it, you know.
Yeah.
And say, actually, this person is in the country because, you know, they were fled a famine or their parents died or, you know.
Yeah.
That's why they're here. They're not here to steal your job. It's this whole case-by-case basis versus the overall a pattern of things that people have to become aware of.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a worldwide issue. I mean, wherever you get migrants, migrants will go to where they perceive the opportunities and the security, and also they will go to where they have existing family who've set up structures that they can sort of move into and create some level of success because that background is there, and those support structures, those communal support structures, are strong. Mm. But so much ultimately comes back to the fact that, you know, everything has a ratchet effect. You've got poor administration of the inflow of people.
Yeah.
You've got inadequate education, which is not, you know, not other people's fault. It's a South African issue. Mm. You've got huge regulations, you know, things like minimum wage, and I know there's a lot of debate about it, but, you know, we're in a situation of not being able to afford to be that prescriptive in an environment of very high levels of unskilled people who need to get onto the ladder, and if they, you know, whatever it takes to get onto the ladder, there's a possibility, a distinct possibility of improving your earning capacity and your ability to provide for your family.
Yeah.
But the crucial thing is that youth unemployment, that young adult who just doesn't have enough of what it takes within the constraints of the business experiences in this country, of just employing people and taking a chance on them, because the processes, the laws for firing, etc., are sophisticated and very much first world provisions. And, you know, it's a case of, well, do you create either, you know, leaving, if you broadly leave the laws, the labor laws roughly in place, do you create sort of blanket exceptions because you need people to take up anything on any terms they can live with? I mean, once they're in employment with the right to join trade unions, et cetera, et cetera, and the many laws and regulations that protect them in employment, that can obviously change. The difficulty is getting people into the workplace just at a starting level to start gaining skills that can be built upon.
Yeah. It's this sort of uneasy scenario, you know, to be an employer in that situation, to say that you're a medical aid, or you're a bank, or you're seen as an employer of choice, and you've got policies in the company that your policies are to be favorable to have a diversity, equity, and inclusion
sure.
Policy that's been built around international guidelines. You know, you have to be on the same. Do you then, as the employer, have to make sure that you're on the same page as the international standards, or do you try and make sure that you're complying with South African law? And are they the same? Yeah. Are they the same? Are you going to find a hiccup there?
Yeah. Well, a lot of South African labour law is a sort of local codification of what exists in international labour organisation standards and agreements.
Yeah.
So in that, that's an, in seeking to meet those standards of protection and I suppose providing, you know, a sense of dignity, the law reflects that. The problem is that the economic policy doesn't easily. Between, you know, inadequate education policy and economic policy, there needs to be some space given the fact that we are a large percentage of population that is underskilled. We need a flexibility for a period, certainly, in somebody's employment life where the employer is an exempt because they can be encouraged to employ because they can take a risk on someone, and if they don't work out, they go. If they do work out, they grow. I mean, we're just not enough catering, I think, towards the complexities that the society throws up. So we're not like Europe or America, where deployment rates are very low and skill rates are high, and they still, with high skills, we're competing with the first world in terms of attracting people from other countries that have skills that we lack, or generally that there's a shortage globally that put in very high demand, particularly obviously highly technological skills. So we've really got to try, on the one hand, to be attractive. To attract high-skilled people, you know, with good hospitals, good housing, you know, being able to have access to, be able to buy housing, etc. And on the other hand, create the flexibility where it's less onerous for an employer to take a chance on a young person and, you know, to essentially, I guess, be exempted from some of those rights until such time as they've been in employment for a period or whatever the case may be, however one may choose to minimize those rights as a temporary measure to encourage the employment of people who don't meet the skills needs.
I think it probably, you know, comes down to the identity of that individual employer and who they are in terms of their you know, if it's in the NGO sector, the type of organization that it is, and their values and their mandate, that's going to determine to a large extent the amount of time and efforts, you know, I would assume that they're going to put into managing these issues. It's an issue that needs to be resolved. We've seen recently in the media, you know, there's been some rising tensions in the UK. They just seem to be abominable, and we certainly don't want you know, those things to escalate in South Africa. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us. We need to go to our next segment, but this is an absolutely fascinating conversation, and we are certainly going to have you back on the show again soon.